I want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk, where we ain't scared. My name is A1, and last week's podcast was really good. We talked about, should all of the women that have claimed sexual abuse by Hollywood executives be believed? It was very interesting, you know, just the way I kind of broke that down. Got some good feedback on my texts. Some emails came in from some friends back in LA. They were, you know, just kind of curious about how or why I delivered it the way that I did. Wasn't pointing the finger, wasn't placing blame, just some different perspectives. So if you haven't heard that, get on over to podomatic.com under Society and Culture. You can also find me at iTunes under the category Personal Journals. Also, get on over to weaintscared.com. Weaintscared.com was on a 10-city tour for Flint. We'll be doing another small tour next year to raise money for water filters. For those that don't know, they've been dealing with toxic lead in their water since 2014. And at last count, they will not have any clean water flowing until 2020. So get on over there and check that out. Also, weaintscaredrecords.com. That came out of the tour. We decided we saw enough good talent that we wanted to shine a light on them, right? And take this to the next level and see how we can go ahead and move these artists into a brighter light and brighter, bigger space. So Black Lives Matter. I have to mention Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter. All they ever say is Black Life Matters. So we will support them because they support us as Black people. And if you can't get behind that, as I always say, you are a part of the problem. All right. So today I have back with me in studio or over the phone, Henry Williams. He's the COO of We Ain't Scared Records. We talked a couple of weeks ago why the music industry is a trap house. That was part one. And today's topic, why the music industry is a trap house, part two. So we'll have a few of these just to give up-and-coming talent or even veteran talent some different information. So Henry is on the line. How you doing, Hen?
Great, sir. A1, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I appreciate you coming on again. We always have some good dialogue before the podcast start. You know, sometimes I wish the listeners could kind of hear that, but I really enjoy it. And now, you know, here I have to act like I don't know you that well.
Okay, that's all right.
You know, just to kind of keep the perspective on it. But, you know, I'm going to open up the floor. You know, Henry, you know, he has a extensive music background, and I do want to jump into it. But just to set the table a little bit, the trap in the title, meaning the traps in the contracts, right, that tend to snare a lot of the talent and things that they don't think about. So on this particular podcast, I kind of want to open up the floor, you know, to talk about publishing, right? We want to talk about technology, you know, we want to cover, you know, just the, you know, the independence. So again, I'm going to open up the floor to you, Hen. You can take it any direction you want, but I know we generally talked about publishing and contracts. So the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, let's get into the, contractual aspect of it. And let's just look at the word itself, contract. As we know, the word con means to persuade. And once you've been persuaded, they're going to track everything that you do. So let's be clear of that. I think the misconception of the situation is, number one, is that artists is under the duress of their financial situation have a tendency to be, to me, put into a financial corner and not left the room or the mobility to do the research to understand what's exactly being signed. General overall of this is kind of like the fat cats have always been eating, and what they've done is left us the scraps. But as you know, we are survivors, so we took the scraps and made them of value. And then we did when they left us chitlins in the back of the plantation house. Mm-hmm. We took those guts of the pig and we made the meal to survive. And I think what's happened, the independents are beginning to take the administrative shipments that was left, and they're trying to basically not being able to survive without the slave masters in depth of appreciation to come to the table. Mm. So now we're in a position to kind of create our own table, and now we're in a position to kind of implement our own recipes of survival without their recipes that they've been implementing to us for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I just think in this process that there's been an administrative facelift that's being implemented. And to give you an example about the smokescreen, is the example of this. They push the industry toward technology, which is a very valuable component. Mm-hmm. But the illusion aspect of it is that they've positioned it to where they have these nuances thinking they can survive mm-hmm. based off that, which is, from a financial standpoint, impossible mm-hmm. because it takes so many streams, depending on the position of your deal, which goes back to the contract. If it takes, if the deal is broke down into four quarters of a penny, it takes X amount of streams to get one quarter of a penny, so forth and so on. And then these same systems take up to a year to pay out, mm-hmm. and our bills come every 30 days. At least, I'm sorry, let me speak for my bills. Come every 30 days. So the independent has been dispositioned to be able to take care of itself. Mm. So we turn around and we have to put out these physical CDs because it's very simple. This is still a very tangible market. Mm. And a lot of artists are surviving off the physical sale of the CD. Now, here's the thing on the publishing side. Mm-hmm. Goes back A to the contract. A lot of these guys have, they're with ASCAP or they're with the BMIs and so forth, and they are, systems are done and complete. They start the process but don't complete the process because there are a lot of people that's on these different social sites and this, the spider flies and all these things in the system. Still they have publishing, but no one's getting a check because there's a piece missing that they're unaware of. Mm-hmm. And we've even found that within the process of artists that we are starting to deal with, they're beginning to see that the process wasn't complete that they thought was complete. And the crazy part about it is that the systems that they're in are not even letting them know where they're not plugged in so they can get paid, which makes me feel you're kind of a part of the problem. So, because if you know you, I got X amount of revenue due to me, mm-hmm. and you know I haven't received it, mm-hmm. and you know if I'm on so particular social media at your site, that you can text me, email me, send out some type of blog, you can, there's so many vehicles of contact that you can let me know that I'm, for some reason my system is set up to get corrected so I can make sure the money delegates to you, and no one has said, okay, spider fly, where does the money go for the people that they counted for? Mm. So in radio, we have a black box, but what does social media have? Mm. Where I can even go to see where my finances actually are. Mm-hmm. So now, I think that goes back again to understanding how to get help. It's okay to get some help. And I try to artists and labels, hey, slow down for a minute. And get some aid and some education in a certain area and go beyond what you think the norm is. Mm-hmm. Another thing as far as these videos that's getting uploaded to YouTube, mm-hmm. I think that's a phenomenal vehicle. But the problem is this. You got 100 videos on YouTube. I like a particular record. But the record's not accessible. It's not set up on no type of social media systems. I can't buy this physically. So I'm just forced to listen to you on this one vehicle when I may want to listen to it in my car or on my phone or whatever device
I have. Well, let me, and I hate to interrupt, but you said something that it struck me with the physical CD, right, versus the internet. And this is a real question that I have in the sense of I don't really think people understand, especially younger artists, the importance of having physical CDs, because I think you shared something with me a few months back about certain parts of the country where physical CDs are still, they're bigger in terms of sales than most people realize. I mean, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I'm using Detroit. We have a pressing plant here called Arches Pressing. Arches Pressing has been pressing stuff since dinosaurs is walking around. Mm-hmm. And they have such a flux of business now. Another manufacturer just opened up vinyl, which is the wax, which is the old school vinyl DJs used to use before the CD era come in the Fed. They just opened up, and Arches Pressing has so much business that they give business to these guys because they can't keep up with demand. Mm. There are certain parts of different countries, the Germanies and so forth, who are still selling vinyl heavy. Mm. They still even selling cassettes.
What?
They still making cars with cassette players. So my whole point was that there's nothing under the sun. You know, everybody running around here talking about these skinny jeans. Hey, I was paying my Levi's, wearing my penny loafers like everybody else. So at the end of the day, things are going to always transform because now the younger market who's coming into play is trying to look back and understand the value of what we value.
Mm.
So in the process of that, curiosity comes onto play.
Right.
So, and this is the thing. If vinyl wasn't selling, why would they make it so expensive to press up in the first place?
Mm. Good point. So vinyl, let's really talk about that, okay? Because we talked about the internet, we talked about the CDs, but I do want to dig into the vinyl component because I think most people think about the U.S. only, right, when it comes to music.
Right.
We don't really think about overseas. We forget, okay, there's 300 million people, okay, in the United States, but there's 6-7 billion people on the planet outside of the U.S. So what is it about the overseas market that makes vinyl so attractive? I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And what happens is, number one, I don't care what kind of DJ you are. Vinyl is the substance and the material of the vinyl. It gives the DJ a certain relationship with the song. Mm-hmm. And it gives a certain control of the record. It's just a relationship that if you're not a DJ, you won't get it. Mm-hmm. To me, making a position of a DJ to have all configurations at his availability broadens your opportunity to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Overseas, the market is more receptive to traditional grassroots marketing and in-store play and club play are not, let me be very clear, they're very technically savvy.
Mm-hmm.
They have the CD player, they have those things. Mm-hmm. But believe you me, for every DJ that got a CD crate, you got a vinyl crate too.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cross over to that, even from a political standpoint, it implements a certain form of respect for history.
Mm-hmm.
And this business comes down to relationships. So sometimes, okay, you may do strictly digital, and everybody said, well, everything's online, but I'm not seeing the check come online. Versus me getting a CD, pressing it up, and let's say my overall unit comes about $1.10 a unit, $1.20 a unit, what have you. Mm-hmm. I go on the street, I sell it for full $5, and I sell five of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, or we sell 10 of that, $5 is what, $50?
Mm-hmm.
But if you, and which is work, but it's fun work because you're selling you.
Mm-hmm.
If you sell maybe 150 every 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
you know, 150, that could accumulate enough to at least pay your cell phone bill or put some gas in your car or something tangible that could help you keep going. It helps definitely with the marketing. And I think a lot of artists need to have that experience because it kind of lets you understand the work that has to go into making you happy.
Because
sometimes a lot of these artists think because of social media, there's no work that has to be done. And they think social media can do everything. And social media don't go on the road. The whole component about social media is to make sure that we can get the numbers up and get the viewership up so we get to the market that get overlooked. I'm not talking about the major markets that the major mainstream did, but the independent pockets that I might have like an A-Matic who's good in Philly, and that said, we got some town surrounding Philly who's also A-Matic fans. Mm. But A-Matic don't get to those markets.
Mm.
You hear me? Mm-hmm. Because she figured social media can have it, which it has, but it has to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
The upstanders just getting down there and do the ground. And let's be very clear. Let's look at technology from a strategic standpoint when it comes to the military.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have some of the best technical capabilities in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I respect all armed forces, every branch. Mm-hmm. And they're doing a heroic effort. And it makes me have the freedom to go around here and get gas and drive my carbon down, and I'm very thankful.
Mm-hmm.
But as much technology as we got, what's one word that's been said through the history of war? Where are we going to position our ground troops?
Because
ground troops win wars.
Yeah.
Okay, same scenario. But in the record business, our tech support is social media. But where are your ground forces?
Right. Right.
Our ground forces would be us being on pavement, doing shows, some cities on the street.
Right. Right.
So my point is, we still have to have a strategic opponent to win the war.
Yeah, and you know what? To add to that, you know, I first of all, let me encourage everybody that's listening. If you don't have Tidal, you need to get Tidal. Jay-Z's company. Because Jay-Z is doing something in the industry, and I'll let you chime in on that too while I make this comment, that a lot of streaming companies are not doing by really breaking bread, right, with the talent. But more importantly, he's scooping up, right, a lot of the old school talent and the new school, like Yo Gotti, right? You mentioned In the Streets. I was watching I Still Am. It's about a 20-minute documentary, and he was talking about when he was in Memphis and he was coming up and he was selling the physical CDs, right? $5 a pop, and he was selling, you know, 5,000-10,000 units, man, you know, at 50 G's. And he was doing it, and he discovered that the tangible cash, right, in your hands. And I think even Ludacris was saying when he was with Def Jam, before he was signed with Def Jam South, that he was selling 20,000-30,000 units out the trunk of his car, and that's what caught their attention. So I'm co-signing, or just kind of dovetailing, if you will, about the physical component of it. But then it's the, you know, it's the work, right? That's where the work is, because when you're in the streets, right? I mean, you're walking down the street, or you got a street team. You know, just talk about the importance, even, you know, like, what is it about, what kind of street team, the ground troops, the clubs, the radio? Talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, first of all, let's go back to some tradition that's kind of overlooked, the record pools. Record pools are so overlooked in this market today, and they don't realize how vital
what is the record pool?
The record pool consists of a group of DJs who belong to club in the lines of, let's give an example, like, used to be a record pool here called Mad Record Pool,
mm-hmm.
which was, the pool director was Michael T. at the time. And the pool consists of multiple DJs that are in multiple positions. Example, Mad Record Pool had DJs that were on the radio, they had DJs that were in the club, and they had mobile DJs. And the record companies submit promotional materials to the record pools for the DJs to start promoting the record and getting the pre-promotion of the records before started on the ground and by airs, so forth and so on, before the record's actually released. And all like test press, the white labels, usually it will come with no, you know, the sleeve, you'll know who it was because the company card will be there, but then they have a white label, you'll know, came from XYZ. And what happens is each DJ kind of does a report on the record to kind of give them a general idea of how the record is functioning. Like, you may have it's just a one sheet of paper, might have like, okay, questions like, you might have a question for the DJ, would you add this record to your playlist? What was the floor response to the record when you played it? Did you get any requests to play the record again? Did people walk onto the floor? Did people walk off the floor?
Mm.
And let's say you got 10 radio DJs and 10 club DJs and 10 mobile DJs. And let's say out of those 30, you got 20 of them giving you some basic good reviews of the product as a whole. Then hopefully kind of gives you some direction where you are in the market a little bit. Now you can have some DJs that may not like the product, which is okay because they can give you their feedback as well and say, hey man, it's a good record, but XYZ, didn't really do it for me. And also get an idea what maybe you might want to tweak or fix on the next project or to cater to a particular market. So it kind of gives you some insight. And again, it puts you back in the traditional realm of doing the record business. You have some DJs that have been in close for snatched amount of time. You have good DJs who have been in position as far as radio, so forth and so on. Again, no discrediting the internet aspect of it, and I'm not saying that it doesn't have a viral point, but tradition, keying in with the direction of what the business is going on from a technical component, combined, you can have a successful outcome. And to me, it positions you not to put all your eggs in one basket. And that's very important, because we're in a market where it all counts. It's like working a job. Okay, when you go to work, don't get me wrong, you're definitely 40 hours. But you love signing up for the overtime. Because the overtime is the extras, you get me? To help you say, well, man, okay, this, I know you make 500, but since I'm work 30 hours overtime, I'm going to get an additional XYZ. You get me? Well, the overtime in the record business is wherever social media isn't. And social media isn't walking up and down the club. Social media isn't getting out asking the people and talking with the people. Just introducing yourself and going by. Even though retail is very scarce in certain markets, it still doesn't hurt to have some type of relationship in that space, if at all possible. I just overall feel that we have to be very adamant about the balance of business. And I think sometimes we have a tendency to lose sight because we're so easily media guided. And everybody wants to be a boss, but we're doing more following than leading. And when I say lead, I mean lead in the lines of doing the research to understand who you're following. So I just want to be very mindful of that. And let's look at 50 Cent, who is, for me, a personal hero. I've never met the young man, but I've always been a supporter of him. When his product come out, I'll go to Best Buy and buy it. I go to Target and Walmart and buy the product because I want to see this artist, you know, do the best he can. He has his hands in everything. He's very diversified. And one thing that is very important that a lot of people don't understand about 50, this is my own personal assumption. I like the way that the things that he's doing now were projects he's been working on for 7 years, 5 years, 4 years. When I had to talk about the Power, Power was a 6 to 7 year development process for him. The deals he was offered deals for liquor and all kind of things in the 2003, 2004 era, but he took his time because he said sometimes you can over position yourself, and because others think you're ready don't mean you're ready. You know when you're ready. And you might have taken your time and sometimes we quick into these things to be able to say, I got a liquor line, I got a clothing line, I got this type of, I got that going on. And a lot of dudes have to be a jack of all trades and I'm sure none. I was just in a conversation with Cliff Thomas and another gentleman, and I asked a very plain question. He was explaining some things about particular artists, and I said, okay, so how actually are they doing? Who's selling? And the conversation kind of stood still because the numbers couldn't be presented to me, which is fine because that's all part of it. It's the fact that sometimes we can't think we're in the midst of reality and we really don't know what's going on. And I'm saying that to say that 50 has his hands on a lot of things and a lot of things. He's everywhere and he's learned to. And he said the best on one of his. He said, I know who to be friends with. And you got to be friends with radio to a degree, especially if you're generating the market he wants to generate. You got to have relationships in other spaces as far as the movie industry, soundtracks, commercials, endorsements, what have you. But we keep our social circles so small because we're trying to stay in the hood. And those days are over with in the lines of social media and other things. Now the world is becoming much smaller because a guy just the other day hit me from Ghana. asked me about some t-shirts. So on FaceTime, so it is going to show you that, you know, a few years back, he never could have gotten in contact with me.
Mm-hmm.
Not this, no, social media aspect of back in those times, but now we're so approachable,
interconnected,
and aligned and interconnected now. It makes us more accessible. So now more things can actually happen for us.
Mm-hmm.
And 50 has made me honestly slow down and reevaluate how I'm doing things and making sure that my steps are completed. And I'm guilty of it as well. Sometimes it'd be a success, but not as successful it would have been if I'd have waited X, Y, Z a little bit, maybe 2 or 3 weeks and then did this and did that.
Mm-hmm.
Just taking from that and slowing down and trying to get everything lined up and say, hey, how we're going to format this thing, what's going to be the best situation for it, because each situation is just like every raindrop is a different shape. Mm-hmm. So we have to learn that each artist has its own shape. Mm-hmm. So we have to make sure that we're guiding it. Even though there's a basic format, but it might do tweaking because this artist's skill set on this side versus his skill set on that side.
Right. Yeah, and I you know what? It's like as soon as we start to really get into the meat of this thing, our time, starts to get limited. And that's really just so I know people's attention span is so short, their time is so short because everybody's doing so many different things that I try to just keep the time relatively under, about a 20-25 minute situation. And I appreciate you understanding that.
But not to cut you off, but you know why the attention span is so short in certain spaces?
Go ahead.
Because no one's saying nothing to keep their attention. I tell people in social media circles, and it's a good avenue to position in the lines of when you put a particular product.
Right.
You only have so much time in a certain space because the attention span is very short.
Right.
That's why you got to have enough product and something valuable there to make them want to take more than a few seconds out.
Yeah.
And when people are hearing the truth, believe you me, and it reflects in them, it's like going to church. You've been sitting in church, there's a thousand people in church, but you can swear the preacher's talking right to you.
Yeah.
This situation is talking right to a lot of people.
You're right.
And the attention span is going to expand. Because you're not going to have a voice. Because you and other we're going to keep pushing the line on the truth.
Yeah. Yeah, you're kind of cutting out a little bit. Yeah.
At some point, we're going to be hurt.
Yeah.
Just wanted to put that in there.
No, you're right. You're right. You definitely stepped on my toes, man. I appreciate you for that. It's not a bad thing, because I'll be honest with you. I fall victim to it as well. I always like to be honest and transparent because I think that if you're honest and you're transparent with the listeners or people in general, the hope is that they'll see you. It's like, okay, you're a genuine cat, and you're not just trying to shovel stuff in my face, right? Blowing smoke. And I totally agree. I think what I do like about your perspective and your direction of it all is it's sincere, right? And some people may hear that and say, oh, well, you have to say that. You're working with them. But no, that's not true. I mean, I value your opinion and your thoughts and the show because there are people across this country that are listening to this and that are hearing this, and people can pick up on phony. Right. They can pick up on fake. They can pick up on, well, you just saying that because you just know you think that's what I want to hear. And I'm glad to know that this is 100%, authentic. And to kind of add and stretch a little bit, because now I feel led to just, kind of touch on something, as it relates to, what you said about 50 and then basically what we're doing and how we're going to be putting this together. You mentioned earlier, this is before the podcast start, about an independent sort of label commission, right? And you want to expand on that?
Yeah, basically what it is is that no one's made it till we all made it. And I just thank the labels who are across the United States and across the world using this podcast and other podcasts as a vehicle to build a commission in the lines of, hey, this is what's going on at my label. This is me, what's going on at the artist. I'm having these type of issues. Do anyone have any ideas that you can suggest to help me get past this hurdle? And as a collective, we can come up with different sources and resources to come up and help that artist get over that particular leg of the race, as they say. And I don't know at all. I know more when you tell me. So in the process of that, I can have an issue. I put my issue out there, and I get the feedback from it. And I say, you know what? I didn't think of that. Man, I'm going to try that. And who you are, I'm such from such and such company. Man, listen, I'm going to put your company name on the back of this CD and on my special thanks. And I'm going to put it in there so they understand why you're in there. Hey, this guy gave this idea, and believe it or not, it has helped me, whether it's spiritually or financially. It gave me a different direction to look at. And it's okay to ask for help. A lot of people think, you know, I'm a boss. I don't, you know, I'm going to do it my way, you know. But that's fine. But it don't hurt to have information from others and get a different opinion, because somebody in England may see something different that you don't see.
Right.
To help you get in that particular market. And I'm telling artists, they need to get more diversified. Mm-hmm. Quit trying to put music in a specific category. Category is over with. Mm. It comes down to the content now. It's a content business. You know, if you got a good rapper and this rapper can rap over a house track and they try to put that music in a certain space because they feel they understand its origin, that's incorrect thinking. Because if there's me and I can rap, and I can rap over Jack Your Body or No Way Back or any of the old house records, using as an example, or Technicolor by Wyclef, whoever it may be, and I can jump in a particular market and expand my brand, then why wouldn't I do it?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? You just brought up something, and that is definitely, I can already tell, is going to be a great lead-in, right, for the next, for part three, you know, the house music, you know, and that component, and that versus what current hip-hop artists, how they view it, and how there is money, right, in that. So I want to tease, right, part three, right, with that, because I know you, again, have extensive knowledge and experience with that. So let me say thank you, Henry, for, you know, for coming on and sharing and dropping these jewels. And I'm running out of ink in my pen, right? I got to have like 3-4 pens when I talk to you. But as always, I want to ask, you got any shout outs, anything you want to, you know, anybody you want to say something to before we sort of sign off here?
Yeah, I'll say shout out to change. Shout out to accepting something different. Shout out to developing your skill set and expanding your market space. And I want to do a special shout out to you and all your support and love and hard work. And I want to do a special shout out to Jen. She doesn't get the credit she deserves on the team. I want to make sure she's acknowledged.
Much respect.
Jerome, who was my brother, he's working hard in the studio. When his wife sells him the time to go to bed, she brings his pillow and cover in the studio. He's working hard, you know, just to the overall team.
Yeah.
Cliff Thomas, you already know what it is. To my Detroit artists, y'all already know what it is, and artists abroad, and ones that's on board, and the ones we in the future get blessed to meet. Hey man, we just gotta keep this thing moving, man, and let's put the truth on the table and let's get some money.
That's right. Let's get this paper.
We ain't scared, man. Let's go get the money.
We ain't scared. That's right. So I want to thank you for checking out another podcast of Ferocious Talk. You got some good food for thought. My name is A1 with Henry Williams. And what do we say, my brother?
We ain't scared, brother.
That's right.
Remember that, we ain't scared at all. Oh, I got to go shout out to my main man, Lou.
Go ahead.
Lou, Cray Saver Records is going to be a big, big, big smash coming in 2018. Look out for it. A lot of things going on.
All right. Shout out, Lou. What's up, Lou? All right, y'all. We ain't
scared.
We ain't scared.